Our next guest on the program is a writer and information warfare expert and a foreign policy and strategy consultant. She has written a tremendous piece on Politico that's getting a lot of buzz because, well, frankly, it scares the heck out of you if you read it, but it is well worth your time to look into it. Molly McHugh, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start right at the top. Release the memo. That hashtag and that campaign was essentially an 11-day case study in what's known as computational propaganda.
That's right. And I think that it was a really interesting one in this particular period of time in sort of the American information landscape. Because there's been a lot of discussion about sort of Russian bots and Russian social media influence, and there's been a lot of commentary, obviously, about what's happening from sort of the right side as well. And this was a really interesting fusion of all of these things. It was a component that was human, there was a component that was bot, there was a component that was Russian, and there was definitely components that were real, authentic American, sort of underlaid by this amplification and automation of promoting content in very manipulative and coercive ways, targeting members of Congress and other influencers to try to push this agenda. And kind of the combination of all of those different things was really interesting and very quick and very effective.
Now, I'm sure there are people out there, although we have a very smart audience, but there are people who don't understand what bots are and how they work. Can you give a brief tutorial, particularly on Twitter and on social media, of how those bots work and what their purpose is?
Let me climb up out of my nerd hole a little bit and give a little more detail. But there's algorithms that underlay all social media in terms of how it decides what is important. So, you know, what is the trending news? What is a trending topic? How does Facebook or Twitter or anything else put the article, tweet, post, video in front of you that it is giving you as recommended content? All of that is determined by algorithms, and there are ways to kind of game those algorithms to make your thing trend, whatever your thing might be. You can also pay for that, but you can also do it without pay. And bots are used kind of in that category. So you create an automated account on these things that repost or post or retweet content automatically without needing anybody attached to it. They also can reply to things and sort of automate comments, and that's where you get some nasty kind of trolling at some point as well. So they're sort of bots, which are basically fully automated accounts. Sometimes they're backed by AI or sort of machine learning techniques that make them smarter and look more like people. There's real humans who use software and applications that allow you to sort of automate part of your feed, so it will automatically retweet certain content that comes into your Twitter feed and things like that, and sort of refer to those accounts kind of as cyborgs because they're kind of half human and half automated. And there's sort of other pieces of that as well, but the automation aspect, particularly on Twitter, which is very vulnerable to this, because it allows you to do the automatic posting and retweeting and sort of replies and follow back kind of things, has become very aggressive to the point where you don't even know what's real on Twitter anymore or not. You know, the president has almost 50 million followers. At the inauguration, he had about 23 million. I'm sure he has had a significant increase, but probably 23 million of the accounts that follow him are some form of bot. And if you think about that kind of amplification potential, it's pretty incredible.
Well, you've talked about this being a fusion of elements, the bots, the real people, the media amplifiers. I want to focus on those real people. And these are, generally speaking, folks who are willing to be, I guess, for lack of a better term, human bots, in that they will go out and tweet and retweet often dozens of times a day.
It was one of the most interesting aspects of doing the research on this particular hashtag, as we sort of started with the assumption that, yes, there's authentic Republican promoters involved in this, but there's also going to be a lot of automation. And the combination of those two things was the part that was the most interesting. There are a significant number of accounts that have been, particularly since sort of the 2016 election cycle, that are real Trump supporters, that are real Americans, as far as you can determine, and sometimes it's very sophisticated the way that fake accounts are set up. But the ones that were mentioned in the Politico piece were ones that we verified as actual humans when we called them humans. But they have sort of, there's these long lists of other accounts that you're supposed to follow and promote, so it creates these kind of very effective amplification and feedback chambers. But you'll see them both post lists of accounts to follow and sort of create these bigger connections and networks within social media. But you'll see them telling people what to do. And some of this is also, like, you don't see it. It's kind of in chat rooms and happening secretly as well. But in many of these cases, a lot of the amplifiers will say, hey, everybody, we need release the memo to trend. Keep tweeting it. And you see these very aggressive campaigns, which are backed by automation and bots, to push these hashtags to make them sort of explode. And in the interesting sort of first 12 hours of this particular hashtag, they were very much, there's sort of the automation, the targeting, and the organization that are really critical. The organization was the hashtag, sort of getting all of the discussion of this memo under one hashtag, so all the content was coming up under the same search, basically. The automation we've discussed, the targeting was sort of tagging tweets to specific congressmen and far-right amplifiers who could make this more of a thing and who needed to vote to actually release the memo. So within the 11-day time period, after everybody was sort of captured by this hashtag, the Republican members of the House Intelligence Committee who voted to release the memo were targeted hundreds of thousands of times by messages on social media urging them to release the memo. How much of that was real versus not is hard to know. But if you compare that to the kind of volume that a normal congressional or Senate office would get from phone calls or emails or letters from constituents, this vastly outweighs it and creates the perception, a very manipulative perception, that this is something with public support.
Well, and that's the frightening thing about this, is that the congressmen, and some of them perhaps not as media savvy as the average American voter or consumer of information, can easily be led to believe that there's some sort of national groundswell driving this, when in fact that may not be the case at all.
That's exactly right. And I think these things work better when they're reinforcing bias. It's called confirmation bias, as opposed to trying to create something completely new. But I think it's sort of the reinforcing bias plus that faux sense of pressure that were the two really effective things in this campaign. The congressmen that were being targeted were ones that were already extremely supportive of the president, extremely dismissive of the Russia investigation, already talking about the memo, but none of them were using the release the memo hashtag. And that was the really interesting part, was like getting them sort of captured behind the campaign and driving it forward made it a lot more powerful over the week plus that it was discussed, and sort of drove the entire national discussion. And that was the part that was interesting, because the point of computational propaganda is not just fake news, and I really hate the term fake news because I find it very dismissive of what is actually happening. But the point of computational propaganda is to manipulate perception and to change the way that people are thinking and making decisions for the point of ultimately changing behavior. And that is what we have really not been discussing as much as we should have been since the 2016 election, when we're talking about all of these issues. It's not just about changing our news feeds. It's about changing the way that we make decisions about our country, about our tolerance of certain things. And that's a really messy rabbit hole to go down. But if you put it strictly in digital marketing terms, you know, can something make you buy a pair of shoes? You would say absolutely. But when it comes to can something make you buy a politician, we don't want to have that conversation. And we really need to.
We're talking with Molly McHugh here on Downtown. So we're talking about the right, and obviously they've become quite adept at this, but there are also bots that do their work on the other side, including what are known as Bernie bots.
Yeah, I like the phrase Bernie bots. But there was a really aggressive sort of the same type of architecture put in place on the left in the same time period. So sort of starting summer 2015, moving forward, it sort of became captured behind the Bernie brand. This has nothing to do with Bernie Sanders. I'm sure he had nothing to do with this, but that was the sentiment that was being sort of provoked on that side, was dividing the Democratic Party, anti-Clinton narrative, consistent with what the Russians were doing on the right as well. But this very anti-establishment, burn it all down sense of government. And part of that was, there's been really good documentation on this one aspect of it, which was fake Antifa accounts, so these sort of anti-fascist movement accounts. But there are legitimate U.S. supporters of this. There are real groups doing work in that space who organize protests and demonstrations. But there had been hundreds of completely fake local Antifa accounts. So it would be, you know, Jacksonville Antifa something. But hundreds of fake accounts that were set up to sort of mobilize discussion around these topics. And all of that is still sort of hanging around out there. And it becomes particularly active on certain topics. For example, after the Charlottesville neo-Nazi march, the Bernie bots were super active, attacking anybody who in any way sort of implied that these people were foreign connected in any way, shape, or form, and not just authentically bad Americans, which was a really interesting sort of narrative space for them to be in. But I think this is the part that, again, we need to sort of pay attention to. It's not, everybody wants to say it's Russians or it's crazy Trump supporters or it's crazy whatever, but it is information architecture that is constructed for the purpose of basically radicalization and division. Some foreign, some domestic, and honestly, that's the part that is extremely troubling to me. If you can pin it all on a foreign adversary, wouldn't that be nice? But these techniques are being emulated by people inside the United States because they're really effective, and our social media companies are allowing it to happen, and our lawmakers don't really know how to ask the right questions to fix it. And that leaves us sort of exposed and all of us sort of on the hook for learning how to construct our own psychological and information defense, which is kind of a crappy position to be in.
You mentioned the social media companies. Is there any incentive or is it going to have to come from the regulational incentive for them to fight the bots from their end? I mean, they should be able to do something to control the proliferation, I would think.
They absolutely can. There are, at the very least, the accounts that are super obvious bots, you know, retweeting only completely copied content from other botnets, they could be shut down. The problem is these were sort of initially invented as, by who? It's an interesting question that I hope someone will pursue at some point. But they were sort of invented as, again, part of marketing. And for Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and other things, this is a problem because people who have been paying to advertise on their platforms, which is where the vast majority of their sort of incoming wealth comes from, have been paying for, we have, you know, 4 billion users, and this many of them are here, and this many of them are there, and that's how many people have seen your ad. Well, what if 60% of those aren't real? Mm-hmm. And then people get really angry about that, and nobody wants to have that discussion. And Twitter in particular does not seem motivated to shut down all these fake accounts because it would very much change their financial models. You've heard a lot of discussion in the last year that some of the tech companies, granted not the leaders, but the lawyers were up on the Hill in the Congress testifying about some of these questions. They were very cautious to reply, of course we'll be willing to help in all of your investigations, not to volunteer to do anything on their own. And I think that's the line they're going to continue to take until they are forced to change what they're doing. And that is not going to be, either somebody creates something separate and everybody migrates off these platforms, or these guys clean up their acts and admit that they have created an extremely sophisticated platform for propaganda and screwing with people's heads, which may not have been their intention, but that is now how it's being used, and not just here, in a lot of countries.
So we've got about a minute left, Molly. So as individuals, what can we do, first of all, to be more educated consumers of what we see on these social media platforms, and I suppose to also avoid being an unwitting tool of these bots?
I think that's a huge part of it. Understanding who you're talking to, what you're reading, sort of being careful about your personal hygiene on social media is important. But the other problem of the aspect of what's happening, especially in Twitter, is it's creating incentive for everybody to do exactly the same thing. And Democrats right now in particular believe that the right has a huge advantage in this space, which they seem to have for sure, and want to learn how to emulate it because this is the option that social media companies are giving you. And I think we all need to be cautious about what this is doing to our information space. But understanding when one of these crazy conspiracy theory-like things comes out of nowhere, starts trending from a bunch of accounts nobody knows, that may be something you need to question. If it's left or right, it could be a pro-Democrat or pro-Republican narrative. But to sort of look at narrative and purpose, what is the purpose of this story? Not just is it true or what is it? And then you sort of understand a little more clearly the environment into which you wade. But it is not simple.
Well, it is a tremendous piece at Politico.com. Molly McHugh, thank you so much for your great work on this. And thanks for making time for us this afternoon.
Happy to do it.
Molly McHugh here on Downtown.